Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson. Hey, Fred. Hey. I've been thinking about something this last week,
okay.
Which is has to do with the Texas debacle on the electric grid. And everything I read has the word reliability in it.
Well, of course.
I've been thinking, isn't it time for us as reliability professionals to take a look at this from a reliability point of view and see what comes out of it? So I've just been thinking that'd be fun to chat about. The reliability name is in the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT.
I talked to Kirk about this shortly after it came out, but this has been a couple of weeks now, and there's more and more information out all the time. And the interesting thing is that I think everybody that was a part of that ERCOT board or council or whatever it is resigned.
Yeah, especially the ones that I was surprised to see, many of them weren't from Texas. They were board members from Michigan and other places.
Well, it just add money. You attract all kinds of interesting people.
Yeah, exactly. And there is accountability to be on a board, or there should be.
There should
be. And in this case, there is.
Yeah.
So here's what's interesting to me, and I'll see if I can formulate this almost as a question, which is and I know that Texas went its own route, and they deregulated, and they went independent from the larger grids, and there's lots of things, and I didn't really want to get into the politics of it, more of the reliability of it.
Yeah.
But what it comes down to is what's the demand for reliability? People are buying electricity, but they're buying it without any understanding of how electricity is made, and particularly the whole weatherization of equipment. There doesn't seem to be any feedback loop on this. So the people think they're getting a great deal on a, quote, reliable source of electricity that doesn't seem to bake in reliability to it. So that's kind of the exploration I'd like to do with you.
Well, I think it's beyond Texas. I think there's just here in California, you know, the PG&E shuts the power off for weeks at a time in parts of the state because their deferred maintenance is putting their transmission lines at risk to start wildfires. You know, when it's windy, their lines don't have the basically fuses, for the lack of a better word. I know it's more technical than that, but the pipeline explosion they had San Carlos a number of years ago was pointed back to deferred maintenance, lack of maintenance. And so part of it is the infrastructure in general. And I could keep going. There was a bridge up in Minneapolis that fell down and it wore out. You know, it's just, we're increasing demand on traffic. We're increasing demand on our power and power distribution. ERCOT and other organizations like that have to deal with multiple suppliers rather than just one or two. And so if I want power that's from a windmill, you know, and I'm buying green power, which I have the option to do, I still need the transmission lines, but I don't want 6 different transmission lines coming in across my neighborhood. So we've grown up now in the last 50 years that the infrastructure is just there and it just works. We can count on it.
You can count on it. And it's always going to be there and it doesn't need to be maintained. We know from our body of knowledge in our field that reliability isn't something that occurs in just one phase of operation or product development. I mean, the best way I've known in my career is life cycle modeling and life cycle costing and life cycle budgeting from the very beginning to the very end. And that clearly includes maintenance and operation. And yet, even within the last week, I've had conversations with people about FMEA. Well, FMEA is done during product development. Yeah, but some people do FMEA in support of assets. Of course, that's the subject of RCM, and that's a valid application. And that's done during operations, and it's a different type of application. So the whole point of reliability and availability and maintainability is it needs to be applied throughout the product lifecycle, which is not just the launch, but it's all the way through operation to the very end.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the way budgeting should be done.
Well, you know, that doesn't happen. That's done by quarterly results. I think if a manager has, you know, I've worked all my career, I'm up to a senior management spot and I need to call the priorities and I have stakeholders and shareholders and customers and everybody. Customers want low cost, cheap electricity. It's a competitive market like in Texas and here in California, we have some of those options, but it's, if I can pay 10 cents per kilowatt less over here versus here, I'll buy the cheaper one. It's all the same, right?
Assumes all electricity is equal.
Right.
Well, of course, electricity by definition, you can look at that, but electricity has equipment, and that equipment has to be maintained, and therefore all electricity is not equal,
right?
Because it comes from things that, you know, in maintaining wind turbines is different than maintaining natural gas.
Yeah. Well, I think before we go on into the more details on the Texas one is that I was talking to a potential client and handed her off to a couple other people more in the realm of what they were looking for. But she's described that they were funded by some national organization to create this lab for really specialized testing, creating a very unique environment for product evolution. And without getting into all the details of this lab, but they put in coolers and chillers and high voltage circuit controllers and motor drivers. And it was a lot of industrial equipment went into this factory, essentially to create this unique situation that they could evaluate products and features. And that was 25 years ago. And for 20 years, they come in on Monday, they fire it up, and everything worked just fine. They change the oil, they do a little lubrication here and there. Their maintenance budget was in the tens of thousands of dollars. It was not a big deal for 20 years. Well, you know where this is going.
I know where it's going.
You know, hey, this stuff's wearing out. It had, you know, expected lifetimes of 10 to 15 years, and they've been lucky, and it's gone for 20. And now they're out to 25 years, and it's not like you can swap out a rooftop chiller.
You know? No, isn't it part of our job as reliability professionals to educate people? Let me just give an example. If you're going to go on a cruise, and no one's been cruising for a while for obvious reasons, but let's say you're going to go on a cruise, and you have two cruise ships. One of them is maintained, well-maintained, and the other is not. Now, today, you should be able to get reviews and information on the internet about these different options and then be an informed consumer. Let me take it to another example, a dentist, and you have a bunch of dental work to do. Do you go just by low cost? Do you just say, okay, we got 16 dentists and I'm going to pick the lowest cost? Not necessarily. You might want to look if they do a good job or not.
Right. Ask your neighbors and get referrals and, you know,
And so what about electricity? Do you just go with the low cost and use this variable system they have to where if you end up in a 100-year event, which does happen, obviously, then you're going to pay a lot of money. Have you thought that through as a consumer? Is it our job as reliability professionals to start informing people more that they have to be informed buyers, and that it comes not just electricity. I was thinking about automobiles.
Oh yeah, but you see, automobiles have, you know, consumer reports, to use a simple example, and they collect data and they say this is more reliable than that one. And there's different industries have pieces of that, but I don't know of one for electricity. I'm not going to call up PG&A saying what's your failure rate, you know, in my region. How old is your equipment? What's the maintenance plan? They're going to tell me to take a hike. There should be, but they're going to tell me to take a hike. It's none of your business.
Yeah, well, that's true. But there should be some type of resource for people if they're going to be shopping. if that's going to be a future. Now, maybe that's not the future. Maybe the future is going to be pure utility, and then there's only one to choose from, and so it's a no-brain issue. And then the board then takes care of making sure the preventive maintenance.
Well, that doesn't work either. PG&E's, you know, well nigh a monopoly for the last 50 years or more in Northern California. And there's a few other options, and they're more expensive. But if you go ask a consumer for a commodity, and this is independent of any industry, if it's a commodity, it's pretty much price, because it's a commodity. The difference in quality level of one lump of coal versus this lump of coal might be the sulfur content, but they're graded that way at a commodity level, right? You pay so much per ton of these different grades, and that's based on demand and pricing, oil, right? You don't care what oil, where your oil comes from for your car, you know,
right.
You should, but
and
we
you
don't
should care where your electricity comes from. If you're in a contract,
right.
And you should care that even in a monopoly that they're doing the preventive maintenance, because it has consequences.
Well, that's the dilemma though. And I think it's the ERCOT one brings it out, is that if you're competing and you're racing to the bottom, is one of Seth Godin's
phrases.
Is, you know, if we're really treating electricity as a commodity and customers are presented with information that is really only based on rate, price, then that's the only thing they have available. And there's some, like here in California, there was the green energy as an option. It costs a little bit more, but you're getting it from renewable resources primarily. And so it was kind of, if you've got a green leaf in your heart, you go pay a little more for that. It's like buying organic versus not organic at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. You can vote with your dollars if you want to, but not everybody has that opportunity or luxury to spend a little bit extra for something that's perceived as better for the environment. But in Texas and other places, they're presented a commodity on price. And so the various operators are looking at, well, he's offering it at 12 cents and I got to compete with that, but I'll defer maintenance. I'll not weatherize my equipment. I got to cut costs somewhere.
You undercut the costs and you get more business temporarily. I was thinking while you were talking there, I came to mind as a few trips I've done to Singapore, mm-hmm. and then when I take my walks, I go to these places that where you can buy inexpensive food and mm-hmm. huge
hawker stands
areas. Yeah, and each one of them has a giant letter A through D.
Yeah,
maybe there's an E, which is where the Singapore comes in, and they see if they've done the proper maintenance of the equipment and the safety and mm-hmm. that type of thing. And they have a giant, you can't miss it.
Yeah.
And so the guy's got the D in front of him.
There's no line. Yeah. It's their family and friends, and that's about it.
And why can't we do something? This is kind of silly, maybe, but it seems like the different electric companies should have an A, B, C, D, E as to how well they're maintaining their equipment.
Yeah.
And are they weatherizing their wind turbines and their natural gas equipment and that type of thing? So I'm just saying, that's part of the life cycle, is we have to make visible in some way the things that are right now invisible.
Yeah.
Like you say, in California, you can't get the information.
Yeah. No, you just can't. And I think part of it also is that it's like internet connection. Like you and I are talking on Skype right now, right? We have microphones and computers on both ends and routers. And then I don't really know what's between us. I don't know what route this conversation's taking, right? But we know, everybody knows, that internet connection is becoming more and more critical, especially this last year, for all kinds of reasons. Yeah. And it's just going to continue. I think part of the electricity problem and many other infrastructure problems is, one, predominantly is price. To maintain a bridge is not cheap. And then you disrupt traffic, you interrupt the flow of commerce, and you have to spend somebody's money to upgrade the system, whatever the system is. And then you have to tell somebody that you're going to pay for it. So it's a lot easier to build a new stadium for a sports team than it is to fix the three bridges around it. You know?
Yeah.
And so I think part of it is the, how we are prioritizing our assets as a society. It's way more fun to get in entertainment than it is to fix our water supply or electricity grid. The other part of it is that the internet or the grid is, and we have suppliers dumping power into the grid, then there's distribution systems. So if the power goes out because the cable from the pole to my house breaks, right? I can call PG&E because they have the equipment and resources and know-how to do reconnect safely. And it's in their interest to it because they can't deliver power to the house if I'm not connected. And so they will respond to that. But if it's a transmission line that's owned by the wind turbines that feeding into the grid, PG&E is not going to fix that one. But here as a customer, I don't know where that break is or where that disruption of service is.
And right now we seem to be incentivizing the low cost portion of the whole pipeline. In other words, we're not incentivizing to maintain equipment right now.
Oh, not at all. I think even California, with our major problems and lawsuits that these guys have been facing, is this, that they said it's going to take 15 years to catch up with the existing deferred maintenance, not counting the new maintenance that's coming up in 15 years. So they are in the highway systems in the similar boat. The water systems around the world are in a similar situation. I was going to use boat, but I figured that's a bad analogy for a water system. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that we've prioritized costs to the detriment of our systems that, hey, and I've had that discussion here in the neighborhood with our local water system. And he says, well, we'll just wait till it breaks. And then he says, are you crazy?
No.
You know?
Okay. So here's an analogy. Health. We have grandkids and everything. We try to teach them that eating well, don't drink cola all the time. You're putting things into your body that is going to cause problems later. Yep. But they go, yeah, but it tastes good and it gives me a little jolt and things. So I think the problem is short-term thinking, where people don't look at the whole big picture. Because frankly, what happened in Texas is, I don't know, this is going to be wrong in terms of the span of time, but let's call it a 100-year event. Mm-hmm. Well, shouldn't we be planning for 100-year events? I mean, they do happen. But that has to be allocated out into the pricing eventually.
I think that's the whole point, is the incentivizing for quarterly results or annual results or whatever. And it's not just electricity. We do it in all kinds of areas. But we want results now. We want that sip in the sugar water type stuff because it's immediate pleasure. We get to enjoy it right now. And it's all good. You know,
the fact you get diabetes 30 years later or whatever, I mean, whatever you want to say is the consequence.
Yeah.
That's not on the radar.
Right. But I think a big part of why we talk about it in reliability is, pay me now or pay me later. And it's a very similar discussion with a supplier. Yeah, you can get a cheaper supplier. You can save a nickel. That's fine. But you're going to pay a dime next month because it's just not going to work. Or, in some cases, it's obvious. It's just the cost reduction in one spot just causes a huge cost increase in another. But that supply team was being incentivized. Their bonus was based on cost reduction, not on warranty.
I remember at General Motors, I used to marvel at GM had for years and years. I don't know if they still do, but they would rotate their senior executives every 2 years. Mm-hmm. They basically had them in the queue for promotions. And in order to do that, they'd send them one person to Europe, for 2 years, and then to Asia for 2 years in South America. And we would get these rotating people as executive directors for the reliability groups. And I'd say, well, wait a minute, reliability takes more than 2 years from soup to nuts. You have to have a longer term vision. But we get people rotating in, they say, okay, we need to improve whatever we can do in the 2 year span. That's what we need to do. This is what they would say.
Yeah.
And I'd push back and say, that's ridiculous. If you do that, you're going to be forever behind Toyota and other companies. So this short-term thinking is like a disease.
It was funny when I first came out of the Army, which has got its, an amazing number of examples of short-term thinking, which is probably a subject for a whole other podcast. But I came into the industry, and Raychem Corporation, the founder had recently retired. He was still part of the board of directors, and he absolutely ignored Wall Street. It was a public company, but he said, if it's good long-term, if it's good for our customers, we're going to do that. And the new CEO was more, you know, aligned with the Wall Street folks. So we started doing quarterly rushes, you know, where you got to make the numbers for the quarter. And so all hands on deck, overtime at the end of the quarter to get the shipments on the truck so that we could take a credit for them, even though they're going to sit on the truck for 2 weeks or 3 weeks before anybody actually installed them. But we got them out the door. And so it counted. And so that just created a downward spiral of reducing quality, increasing incentives, increasing the price breaks, and increasing number of runs at the end of the quarter that just continued to deteriorate the system. And so Paul Cook came back and he says, stop it. Don't do that. You know, kind of thing.
Well, we titled this podcast, What Price Reliability? Because reliability has a cost, but if you do it right, you should net. It should not be a net negative.
Right.
But if you do the budgeting wrong, then you won't pay the upfront cost. It'll save you tons of money long term. Short term and long term. Short term and shorter product development cycles and less testing needed, or better results.
I don't agree with that. If you do it wrong, if you do the short term thinking stuff, you end up with ERCOT, where they've said, we'll defer, we'll wait until we have issues. And they did have issues, but that now they have, like PG&E, they published their numbers. We had $15 billion in deferred maintenance.
Exactly.
You know, so you're going to still pay for it. And now the dollars cost more.
Exactly. So you're going to pay more by not doing reliability up front or not including reliability into your cost structure. Because that preventive maintenance should be done on an ongoing basis, not waiting until you have serious problems. So that's kind of what we meant by the What Price Reliability moniker to this podcast.
Well, I think that our audience probably gets this as being smart, savvy people that listen to our podcast, as they are. And that's why we created it for you to continue our discussion. But what do we do about it? One is, you know, ask questions and focus on what is built into this price we got. And if you're shopping just on price, maybe you really don't have enough information here to make the right decision. It's a way more complex problem we're going to solve in 20 minutes. But the idea is that we've got that vision and knowledge that it is really a long-term game. So if collectively, if our audience all went and started asking questions, we might be considered a movement going back.
Exactly. So to the audience here, if you have any ideas as to how we can, what we can learn from what happened in Texas, or what we can learn from the downside of short-term thinking and apply it better as reliability professionals, because clearly it's in our DNA. We know, we understand the importance of maintenance, the importance of design for reliability, and all the different aspects. It all comes together. But how can we communicate that better to our companies, to our consumers, so that consumers can be good, knowledgeable buyers, that type of thing? If anybody has ideas on that, love to hear from you, because that's the resource for future podcasts.
Yeah, it certainly is. And hopefully we maybe even make a change in the world. That would be cool too.
It'd be very cool.
You can leave a note, you can contact us over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And Carl and I and the other co-hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So you can find contact forms, and many of us have our email addresses there. So please do get in touch. This particular issue, one of my favorite quotes, Carl, is never let a good disaster go to waste.
Yes. All right.
All right. Thanks, Carl.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.